how and when you work have changed over the years. When I had a job, I used to get up, commute to work, sit in an office, pretend to work for most of the day, do an hour before lunchtime, go off at lunchtime, go to the gym, come back, pretend to work a bit more, and then go home, mainly delivering an hour of work to my employer. That changed dramatically when I became self-employed, and I suddenly realized if I don't do the work, no one's going to do the work, and life changed completely. And I think the world has changed after COVID, and our desire to work in different places, do different things, and style of work. And I'm very excited to have this episode with you. I have with me Lizzie and Alex, who run an organization called Hoxby, and they are the Sunday Times best-selling authors of a book called Work Style, which I love the title Work Style. Alex, Lizzie, first off, welcome to the show. Welcome to The Rebel Entrepreneur.
Thank you so much for having us.
Hello, Alan. Great to be here.
I've been looking forward to it. So how did this idea of work style come to you both? Did it come at the same time? Were you in the same coffee shop and you were struck equally by the thunderbolt or whatever it was? Or how did this come to you?
Well, it's very similar to how you describe, although it was a pub, not a coffee shop. this is the UK, after all, where all great ideas are discovered in pubs and beer gardens. We were in a pub and we were talking about our frustrations with work. Both of us had very different experiences leading up to that point, which we can talk about. But really what we both felt was that we wanted to be judged on our output rather than on our input. So what we delivered rather than how many hours we spent being present at work. And we felt that, you know, in this day and age, with so much of the way in which work being done changing and the fact that you can work anywhere and any time, we felt that everybody should be able to use that as an opportunity to fit work around life rather than life having to fit around work. And so we thought, well, if you can have a lifestyle, then perhaps you can also have a work style and have the freedom to make choices about that in the same way.
I love that. One of the concepts I've spoken about on the show before is a lifestyle business. And it's that kind of blend of, I want to work, I want to do amazing things, I want to produce stuff, but also I'd quite like to be free to do different things at different times, to travel. If the mood moves me, I will work at 8 p.m. If it doesn't, I will get up at 6. Like, it doesn't matter. But we have an interesting culture around the UK, I think around the world actually, about FaceTime and hours. And I always remember my wife worked for one of the big four, and she had one of the review meetings. You know, you get your annual reviews. And one of their comments was, you always leave before everyone else. And it was almost as if there was nothing about the quality of the work. Mm. It was like, yeah. Why aren't you just sat here? And that comes back to my opening of, I used to be in the office all the time, but I could do my work each day in about an hour. And the rest of the time I would read websites and do other things and pretend to be working, which felt like a jolly good waste of time.
And Alan, it's exactly what we rail against. You know, that is actually 200-year-old thinking, you know, being in a certain place and being judged on the time that you're there rather than the output you deliver. You know, we're geeks in the book and in real life about the history of work. And the concept of the 8-hour working day, working 9 to 5, 5 days a week, is from the Industrial Revolution. You know, the great social reformer Sir Robert Owen, Sir Bobby O, to those of us who are mega fans, he came up with that idea 205 years ago now, I think. And, you know, at the time it was really progressive, but we just think he would be turning in his grave to know that anyone is still judged on that when so much has changed since then. You know, we live in a digital age. We should all be working differently and be judged on our output rather than commuting to an office to sit at a desk.
Yeah, it's like our brains haven't caught up with the fact that since then we've invented electricity, we've swapped horses for cars, we've even been to the surface of the moon. You know, that whole 2 centuries of innovation has seen our society evolve, and we've progressed. It's been good, but we haven't thought to change the way we work to catch up with that innovation. We still kind of sleepwalk into this idea we should be working Monday to Friday in 8-hour blocks. And even more progressive ideas like hybrid and flexible working are still actually anchored in the principles of the Industrial Revolution, which I'm sure we will indulge in a conversation on in due course. But they are still based on retaining organizational control rather than enabling individual choice.
It is interesting, isn't it? Because I think even as an entrepreneur, and lots of my listeners wouldn't even identify with the entrepreneur, they've just started their own business, they're self-employed. But even as someone who's gone self-employed or done something, you still feel like you need to turn up in the morning. You need to work so many hours. It's interesting how deeply ingrained and deeply embedded it is. And even though we've got the freedom to work when we want and where we want running our own businesses, we still seem to obey the 9-to-5 principles. Like, how does that make sense?
Yeah, we think that's really interesting. And Alex and I reflect on that a lot. You know, we have started a business with everyone working in a work style way. We've written a book on working in a work style way. And still, we feel guilty when, you know, I don't work on Wednesdays. And sometimes I just get that nagging feeling, oh, it's a weekday, I should be working. And I think that that is illustrative of just how strong this feeling of ingrained culture and social norms is. You can't just be rational about it and unlearn that. The fact is we're conditioned over centuries to believing that you should be working during the week, when actually you can work any time of 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and as long as you're being productive, you should be judged on your output. So I think we get that too, and we hear that from a lot of other people, that it's bizarre. However much you want to not think that way, social norms still are conducive to people feeling like that's the way they should work.
Yeah, social norms are incredibly powerful, incredibly powerful. And I think I found that, like, we teach debt-free startup and people go, like, what do you mean debt-free startup? Shouldn't you write a business plan and borrow some money? It's like, no, just because the banks tell you that's the way to start a business doesn't mean it is. Same in finance.
We didn't, Alan. We didn't.
Yeah. Yay! That makes me very happy. very happy. So I think
Alex, I touch on
Yeah, no,
point?
No, do it.
I just wanted to talk about this this relationship that we have with work, because for me personally, that was quite a big part of how we arrived at the idea of work style. So prior to the conversation in the pub, I'd already reached burnout as a result of the way I worked and my relationship with work. So I would wake up at 5:30, leave the house at 6:30 to get to the office for 7:30, and then I'd get home 12 hours later, enough time for something to eat, go to bed, do it all again. And I would do it 5 days a week, and I kept it up on the basis that it was as much as I could give of myself in terms of time. I couldn't physically fit any more time into my week for work than that. And if I was doing all I could, then I could feel like I was giving everything, and that is all that I could ask of myself or that my employer could ask of me. And eventually that took its toll. I became a shadow of myself. It took my wife telling me that for me to realize that something had to change in terms of the way I thought about work. And to cut a kind of long story short, the thing that I needed to change was this psychological relationship with work, to stop thinking about it in terms of how much of it I do and start thinking about it in terms of what I output, the value of that, the outcome of the work. And then how many hours I spend doing it kind of becomes irrelevant. It's more about what does that actually accomplish? What does that achieve? And we talked about it earlier in terms of coming up with the idea of work style, but that was really anchored in, for me, this psychological relationship with work that's so important, which is, let's stop validating ourselves on our presence or on how much time we spent working and start start thinking more in terms of what that's actually delivering. And then we can have our own work styles that enable us to deliver it in the best possible way and in the way that we know how to do best for us.
I love that, because I think if I was to offer the audience and all of us a sign that is someone caught up in that pattern, it would be ask the question, how are you? If the answer is busy, you know they're caught up in that pattern. And that seems to have become the generic answer to prove that you're a valuable member of society. How are you? Busy.
Completely
very busy. You know, blah, blah, blah. But it is fascinating how we get caught up in these patterns. So look, I've got so many questions. I'm just going to like go right to the butt. Just briefly, what is work style? Because then I think we can unpack the other questions and work through this. Because I think this is something that even if you reach financial independence, you still feel a guilt of like, I don't have to work anymore, but I feel like I should. It's a Monday morning. Why am I allowed to go for a walk and look at the sky? Lizzie.
Yeah. So work style is the freedom to choose when and where you work in its simplest terms. From a research perspective, it's basically autonomy to choose those things. And it's really the catalyst for this has been, you know, changes in technology that mean that actually Wi-Fi is everywhere, hardware is really portable. You know, you can work wherever you can tether to your mobile phone now. So you can basically work from tree, or been known to work from a wheelie bin. You know, you can work from wherever it suits you. So technology has moved things on. Demographic changes mean that we have to change the way that we're thinking about work. We have an aging population, and there simply won't be enough people to do all the jobs that need doing if we don't reshape work to include people as they age. But also there's this kind of independent mindset, which you've talked about, Alan, in terms of actually we don't have this concept of a job for life anymore. It's much more likely that you'll come across someone who is self-employed or has a portfolio career. And actually, that is the fastest growing labour market, is people who choose to work the way that they choose. And so we're actually seeing a lot of people moving to work style working almost without realising it by choosing to become freelance. So that was the idea we came up with in the pub. Alex and I then decided to run a mini experiment slash test it. We went out looking to see if there was an organisation that we could go and work for that did this, and found there wasn't. And so we started Hoxby, which is was at the time a marketing, creative and comms agency, but we were running it entirely in a work style way behind the scenes. And that was our experiment. That was where we didn't have funding, we bootstrapped, we learned loads along the way. You know, it's been a roller coaster, but we've learned a lot, both about ourselves, about running a business. But we've also learned loads about work style and working in this way. And that's what turned into the book, because after 5 years of people looking at us as though we were a bit weird, then the small matter of a global pandemic came along, and suddenly everyone wanted to know how we worked, and we weren't able to talk to everyone personally. And so we wrote the book. So that's the brief history.
I love that, because it's incredible, isn't it? People look at you as weird, and then something happens, and then all of a sudden you change from being weird outsiders to, oh, maybe they know something. And it is fascinating how that happens. I love that you wrote the book. I love that it became a Sunday Times bestseller. I have a whole bunch of questions about that. But I'm just going to stick with where we are, because I think I don't know if I can eloquently describe this, but I'm going to give it a go and see what you think. There's a line from one of the songs from Lion King that says, there is more to do than can ever be done. And I've started a business where there's more to do than can ever be done. And there's this really interesting thing of, I'm hiring people, and we have a team of 15 in the UK. There's 5 people in Colombia working on Rebel Business School. There's a team in New Zealand. There's a whole team in Morocco. Like, there's more to do than can ever be done. So you kind of pay someone for 8 hours and then go do as much as you can and then go home. And you go, okay, I love the idea. We should be measured on output. But there's still, the world seems to measure us on time. So we run courses and they're like, well, how many days are your courses? And there's this really interesting balance between the world understands hours, days and time, but there's output. How many businesses did we start? But it's almost like it doesn't matter. It's like how many days of the course and how many people showed up. And I find this fascinating. Like, how do we even change this? How do we get away from measuring time to measuring quality of output, depth of output, impact? I don't even know. Help me figure this out.
It's probably the big question for our generation, I think, Alan, because, you know, as technology evolves and technology in the shape of AI and automations starts to reduce the kind of repetitious nature of work that some people do, so the emphasis becomes on us as humans to be able to apply our brains and deliver value through our thinking, perhaps more than time spent operating machinery. So what we need to get good at is understanding value, not in terms of price per hour, but in terms of what we actually tangibly deliver. And that's something that's new. Nobody's really very good at that at the moment from what we've seen, because we're all conditioned to think in terms of time and materials and pricing things in that way, and value being money-based. But I think that there are a whole load of new skills that we need to develop to understand the impact of an individual's work. What is that in terms of a financial value or in terms of a non-financial value? And start to talk more in those terms. And only by doing that will we find the answers to that question that will help us move on out of this this paradigm that we are stuck in and that was created when our work was to operate a machine for 8 hours a day.
I love that. When I first started my own training consultancy, I used to run time management courses. And I did it for a housing association. And then I did a survey afterwards. And I asked lots of questions like, how much time a day did you save? Have you been able to be more productive, et cetera, et cetera? Did some complex equation. I worked out the average salary for the organization. Then I timed the numbers of hours I'd saved these people by the amount, the average salary, to prove a pound amount at the end that each course they bought for, I think it was like, £700 or £800 they paid me for a day's course in the day. It was a steal. And each course returned 20 grand's worth of increased time for each person that came on the course. And I did that calculation. But it's still very much time times money, deliverables, and proving value. Yeah, that's the question. Like, for all the people listening, how do we start to shift towards proving value? What are the questions we ask ourselves? How do we even progress?
I think that there are two sides to that. I think one is, as organizations, how do we reshape our expectations of individuals? And then the second side is, as individuals, how do we judge our own success on something that might be more nebulous than I was sitting at my desk for a certain number of hours a day? So I think the first of those, in terms of the organization, at Hoxby, everything we do is based on a scope of responsibilities. It's never based on time. And I think the scope of responsibilities is a really interesting process and exercise to go through in terms of there being more to do than can ever be done, because it forces you to think, what is the objective of this piece of work? What are the outputs that we really care about? And often there are things that otherwise might seem like a priority, but when you sit down to actually write a scope of responsibility, it helps focus the mind on what the output is, and it gives a much clearer brief to the person delivering the task. So I think for an organization, actually managing work that way is a really healthy thing to do. It provides good rigor, great clarity for tasks and what needs to be delivered. For the individual, I think it's slightly different. I mean, if you work for yourself, you can write your own scope of responsibilities, as Alex and I have. And we constantly revisit those, you know, as the business evolves and changes. But also it's about understanding what you can do when. So I think we have a series of work style worksheets, but a lot of the kind of individualized perspective is about understanding when you work best, knowing yourself, knowing when's best for you to work from a well-being perspective. Mm. And we talk about this framework of set, project and respect as a framework that individuals can then use to set their work style, you know, actually look at when do they work best, when are they most productive, what do they need work to fit around in their lives. Project, creating a verbal contract, sharing that with other people, you're much more likely to uphold it if you say to people, I don't work Wednesdays, because you're managing their expectations. And then respect, which is absolutely fascinating. We found that in terms of respecting work styles, people are far better at respecting each other's work styles than they are at respecting their own. And so often we recommend that people pair up with someone else who can help hold them to account. You know, Alex is much better at making sure I respect my work style than I am myself, for example.
We do more to help other people than we ever will ourselves. It is, yeah, it's fascinating. Yeah. We treat ourselves far worse. Sometimes I look at my wife and go, if you treated someone else as you treat yourself, like, we wouldn't be friends with them for a while, a long time. Yeah. Like, we need to be nice to you. That is fascinating. Yeah. You look like you've got something to add, Alex.
Yeah, I just think that that's just so true when it comes to our relationship with work as well. I think we tend to put work above all else in our minds. So, you know, we're so used to it occupying, you know, for those of us who've been able to work a traditional Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, we're used to it occupying that chunk of our lives, and that everything else has to fit around that. Whether that's, you know, our childcare obligations or visiting a dentist or a doctor or looking after our health, our well-being, going to the gym, all the stuff that is for our lives beyond work, we've had to fit into, you know, the evening hours when, you know, we've done a day's work already, and it just, you know, it, we're used, I think, therefore, to deprioritizing ourselves. And I think that's one of the big things that with work style we want to change, which is to enable people to start prioritizing themselves, their own well-being, for the good of their own productivity and the quality of their work as well, and just turning that whole conversation and belief system on its head is really at the heart of what we're trying to achieve with work style.
Yes, I love that. I think I do find it fascinating, just to add a perspective, which I'd be interested to know your thoughts on. When I was at work and working even for myself, I'd work Monday to Friday, I'd really look forward to the weekends, because it's my time off, but I'd arrive at the weekends exhausted. I'd spend 12 hours asleep recovering from the week, and weekends were the thing. And then there's sometimes a lot of pressure on the weekends to be good. And then you like get the Sunday night feeling, you go back to work. And even when I loved what I was doing and didn't have the Sunday night feeling, it was still like, oh, the weekend's over. Like, you don't have the dread of going back, but you still have the, oh, the fun times are over kind of thing.
I've talked about this in the past, because the reason the thing that took me to the conversation in the pub with Alex was having my first child, my son Finn. And that totally opened my eyes to enduring inequalities at work. But I think the thing for me that I think is really parallel to what you're saying is about the binary nature of work and of maternity leave. You know, I always used to say that about maternity leave as well. You're off and then you're suddenly back on. And it's kind of the same thing with what you're talking about, that, you know, it used to be 5 days, you give your whole life to work. If you get anything else done, that's kind of a bonus. And then at the weekend, you don't do any work, but you need to have pure fun all the time, which actually is also quite exhausting.
Yes.
Or do all your life admin or whatever. And I, for instance, I go to the gym 3 times a week before I start work, and I tidy the kitchen, which obviously isn't pure fun, but I would say
that feels good.
Yeah, it does feel good. And I think that it makes me better at my work, because I start work at 10:30 on the days that I work. But before then, I've already gone to the gym, I've tidied the kitchen, and I have none of that baggage in my head, which means that I think when I sit down to work, I have so much more clarity and energy to do the work. So I think it's unlearning that kind of binary, this is when it fits in your week, and all fun needs to be reserved for the weekends as well. You can have fun in the week too.
There's a really good way to unlearn it as well. Like if you think about the fact that everyone is basically working or has been working to the same schedule. So everybody's been commuting at the same time, causing traffic jams and endless stress. And we've all been trying to get onto trains that can't accommodate us all. And the population's booming, and it's only getting worse that we're all moving into the same places at the same time. That kind of chaos can be avoided if we liberate each other to just work when and where we choose. So when starting out on the Workstar journey, I'd make a point of going to my local supermarket at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday because I knew there was no one there. Whereas everyone else is going on a Saturday morning, and I don't have to live with that. I don't have to surround myself with everyone else doing it at the same time because society says we should all be behaving in that way. And I think that mindset helps take some of the pressure off the weekend to be awesome, because you can actually just start tailoring your lifestyle to doing things when it suits you to do them best. And sometimes that means working on a Saturday or on a Sunday. But if that works for you because your partner's at home, or you know, your kids are going to clubs or sporting activities or whatever, you know, lots of people say, actually, Sunday is my best day for work because I get 3 hours in the morning when my son's at football and no one else is online. So I can just sit down, do all my thing, don't get interrupted, and it's amazing, and I'm hugely productive. And I think that is just an example, again, of just flipping this whole system, this whole belief system on its head, and starting to just use every hour in the week to our best advantage. There are 7 days, 24 hours in each of those days. And that frees up a whole lot more choice than when we start thinking about work occupying 8 hours of those days, five times a week.
So how does this... I'm interested to know, how does it fit with sort of sprint working? Because this is a concept I've been playing with. I really wanted to write a book. So I set aside some time and I went to a Thai island, obviously an island in Thailand. And in 10 days, I wrote my 90,000 word book. And I would get up first thing in the morning, go to a nice cafe, obviously with a wonderful breakfast. I'd work for like 3 hours, do a huge writing session. Then I'd come home, go to the gym, like look after myself, then go back out for the afternoon, then go for a Thai massage, and then write in the evening. And sometimes I would write till 10 o'clock and I would feel good. But in 10 days, I did such a huge amount of work and I felt so productive. I also produced a video course for the company as well. Like I was on fire that 10 days. And Katie was off on a retreat. So like, it was like, I didn't have any responsibilities. I could just work. Like how does the idea of sprint working fit in with work style? Because it feels more of like we always have Wednesday off, or this is the way it does work. Like, how do those two things tie in?
Yeah, and I think it doesn't have to be a routine that you follow every week. You know, Alex works term time predominantly, you know, and we have lots of other people in the community who do the same. So it doesn't need to be that I don't work Wednesdays and that's how it always works. And I think one of the things that we've looked at is what are the ways that work style improves your productivity? And I think your example there actually illustrates every one of them. You know, we talk about energy and maintaining our own momentum. You know, you talked about how much momentum you had because you had a clear goal, you're working in your way, and you actually achieved something. And utterly remarkable to Alex and I, who took a whole lot longer than that to write that many words for a book. You had clarity, so you were doing the right things at the right time for you when you would have that clarity of thought, and you were taking the right breaks, you were getting the right food and exercise, massage, you know, amongst it to have the clarity. Probably when you're having the massage, your brain was still working in the background. You weren't actively thinking, but you were passively formulating your thinking, ready to go back to it in the evening. Mastery, you know, you gave yourself time to focus on honing that skill of writing and delivering the video course. Trust, you felt so accountable and trusted to just deliver that in your way. And then the fifth one is environment, you know, finding the optimal place to work. And you were able to, like, quite literally, most people don't get to do that, but you went to the optimal place for you to work. So we talk about energy, clarity, mastery, trust, and environment as being the five ways that work style can completely transform your productivity. And I think whether that's in a sprint or in an ongoing way isn't really the point. The point is that you are at a kind of superb level of productivity that you otherwise wouldn't have been able to find without work style.
Yes, I love that. You've eloquently managed to take my ramblings and turn it into a wonderful model that you've thought about for a long time. I absolutely love that. So I'm really interested to know, like, our listeners, I've started to realize, don't just build businesses. They're not just self-employed. They're looking to live their lives in different ways and create something extraordinary. Like, what would be the top three gifts, ideas, tools, things that you would give to our listeners to help them on their journey to being proactive, creating more, doing more? What would you tell them to do, actively do after the podcast? What would you give them?
A copy of Work Style, Revolution for Wellbeing, yes, Productivity and Society.
Love it. Buy the book.
Available on Amazon or in your local bookstore. I think the book, joking aside, the book is designed to inspire. And I think one of the big things that we haven't really talked about in our conversation is what work style really enables for society as well as for people living their lives and productivity, which is, so taking Hoxby as an example, when we took away the barrier of having to be in an office and the other barrier of having to be there from 9 to 5, so we said you can work anywhere and anytime. We opened up our talent pool to anyone, anywhere in the world. Whereas prior to that, we would have been restricted to only those people who can get to the office and only those people who can work between the hours of 9 and 5. And that severely limits our ability to access talent, but also our ability to create a diverse workforce within our company as a result. So we look at inclusion as being a really big aspect of why individualizing work through work style is such an important thing to do. So I could go into this in more detail now, but I think probably the first thing to say is inspiration through the book to understand the potential to tap into a global workforce that can increase the collective intelligence of your organization through its diversity is the first thing, because organizations that are made up of people who look, think, talk, and act the same are statistically not as successful as organizations who are made up of diverse people with the conditions for those diverse people to collaborate. A McKinsey study in 2019 proved that those organizations in the top quartile for ethnic and cultural diversity outperform those in the fourth quartile by up to 36% in profit terms, profitability.
Oh, you're so, talking my language now, cash.
So, yeah, there's a, exactly. And it goes back to this value conversation. We can all understand that, can't we, as a statistic and bring relevance to what we're saying. But so I think work style is a way of working that improves people's lives, improves the quality of our work, but more importantly, it creates access to work for millions more people who can't access it through its traditional form, and it creates more diverse organisations who are collectively more intelligent. So it's better for people, it's better for business, and it's better for society. And if that isn't inspiring or a gift to an entrepreneur, then I don't know what is.
I feel like Alex is focused on the inspiration side there. But I think in terms of three things that we could give to the listeners, I think the book and the inspiration is hopefully the first of those. But then I think maybe there are a couple of other ones. The second one might be permission to not work 9 to 5, 5 days a week, to use the word work style and the concept of work style. You know, we always say, try saying it to the cat, try using it in a conversation, see what happens, because quite often people will use it back to you. So the first is inspiration through the book. The second is permission, use the word work style. And the third, I think, is support. That since the book was so successful, we have opened up a public Slack community called the Workstyle Revolution. It's at workstylerevolution.com. And it means that anyone who wants to, you can be employed, you can be self-employed, you can be retired, you can be not yet working, you can be working part-time, whatever it is, anyone can join that community. And that community is not only amazing in terms of bringing people together, but also there are tools in there, interesting articles, work style worksheets. So there are elements to support. So I think inspiration, permission, and support would be the three things.
I love that. Where can our listeners find this community, Slack channel, people, tools?
So if you go to workstylerevolution.com/join, then there's a button there where you can join the community and it's open to everyone. I think it's got about 350 people at the moment and it's growing every day.
I love that. I love that, because the inspiration to be able to work differently, do things differently, I think is so, so important. One last thought from me, which I'd love you to tie into. Well, I have two last thoughts, actually. So we're going to skip one last thought. The first one is about energy. Something I've been saying on the podcast and the courses for a long time is it's not about the time, it's about the energy you have. And most people run out of energy before they run out of time. And talking about the 12-hour work days, you get home at whenever it is, 7 o'clock, you have your food, and then you sit on the couch at 8 o'clock and you cannot do anything but watch Shark Tank or whatever the random TV show is that's on at that point. I can't believe I picked the American version. I'll get shot for that by UK listeners. Dragon's Den. But whatever TV you pick, you can't physically do anything because you're destroyed. So how does work style help us to have more energy to get more out of the hours we have? Because I don't think hours are the ways that we run out of energy and juice before we run out of time.
Yeah, I think there's two sides to that. I think on the one hand, there's our kind of natural circadian rhythm that determines where we feel most energetic naturally. So some of us might be more energetic in the mornings. We might be early risers and therefore larks. Some of us get our energy in the afternoon or in the evening, and some even through the night, actually, you know, and prefer working at nighttime. And so they'd be night owls. So there's that element to the makeup of the day, which can affect our energy and how we feel at different times of day, and being self-aware of that is an important part to making the most of the energy that we have at our disposal. But I think the other side of it is the psychological side of it, which is working on something energizing, something that's meaningful, purposeful. And we talk about, in the book, we talk about working to a purpose, understanding our purpose in life, and perhaps even working towards our eulogy rather than towards our CV as being a kind of way in which we can derive a sense of purpose from the decisions we're making about what work we do. But having decided that, having the freedom to choose when and where we work gives us the flexibility to choose to prioritize the things that give us energy or that take us towards that sense of purpose. So come the end of the day, the decisions we've made along the way have been things that we feel have taken us further towards our purpose, things that have given us energy. And by the time we get to 8 o'clock, we're not ready for mindless TV. We're fresh. We feel good. So I think that's those kind of two sides of energy that are kind of worth thinking about.
I would also add that I think there are a couple of theories that we talk about in the book that are relevant to this. So we talk about Parkinson's law, work will expand to fill the time that you have for it.
Oh boy, it does, yes.
And I think that that's worth, you know, even just knowing that is valuable, because then you sometimes you can set your own parameters and just make sure you get something done, like writing a book while you're on a Thai island. And the other is the Pomodoro technique. So working for, say, 25 minutes and then having a 5 minute break. It's something that I use a lot, and I'll go and I'll fold some laundry or something and I'll come back refreshed and with energy to go again. So I think there's also more kind of micro techniques that you can use to preserve your energy too.
I love that. I love both of those things. The Parkinson's Law one has effectively massively over the years, because you go, oh, I've got all day to do this task. And then all of a sudden it takes all day. And you're like, how did that happen? It was only a small thing. Yeah, it's fascinating how these simple time management techniques can really make an impact on your life. Alex.
Yeah, I was just thinking as well that there are, we haven't talked about this, but there are things that really zap my energy. I don't know about you, but normally it's when something comes along and it interferes with what I want to do. So we talk about autonomy being the key to well-being and to productivity, and that's the essence of work style, is giving people as much autonomy as possible. But as soon as something comes along that stamps on my autonomy, I get really, I feel it acutely, the zap to my energy that brings. You know, it's something that you're not prepared for, or something that just determines your day for you. It's out of your control. It can be very often. Sometimes it's just something you have to do rather than something you necessarily want to do. But being mindful of those things that are happening in the day, and aware that they're probably the things that are going to zap your energy, can be really helpful when thinking about managing your work style over the course of the day, and allowing those things to happen and feeling okay with it, knowing that you can pick up work later or reprioritize things because you have that, you know, more control than you perhaps would have had in the past, I find is helpful for kind of maintaining energy over a day.
Definitely. I would add to that, just ignoring the phone call that comes in. Like, even if it's there vibrating, just if you don't want to answer it, don't answer it, ignore it, and do your actual stuff that you want to do. I think sometimes I get so distracted by answering emails and messages rather than doing what I actually need to do.
That's interesting, because we also talk about deep versus shallow work. You know yourself and know when you're good at doing, like, I do good deep work in the morning. And shallow work, you know, I can do in the afternoon, and I can have a change of scenery and sit in the kitchen, and, you know, but knowing yourself about when you're best off doing those bits rather than having to react to when other people want you to do it, I think can really help preserve energy too.
Awesome. So we're going to wrap up just before the closing message. Is there one thing that you'd like to say to the audience, one thing you'd like to leave them with? Maybe it's something you've learnt building your business. Maybe something you've learned, like getting the most out of yourself and doing what you want to do. Whatever it is, I would love to know. What's the one thing that you'd love to leave the audience with?
I think the thing that I would say is that none of us should underestimate the impact that this can have on the world. Alex talked about inclusion earlier, and in the book we talk about 7 groups that are structurally excluded from work as long as we keep on working in this traditional 9 to 5 days a week model. And we talk about productivity and well-being, but ultimately the thing that really gets Alex and I excited about this movement is the impact that work style can have on society. And it's not the same as flexible working. It's not the same as hybrid working. It's something much more radical that truly levels the playing field to include people in work. And I think that is the thing that's so exciting for us. And we'd love to hear from anyone who listens to this or reads the book, and if they have any thoughts as to how we can further that cause, because that's the thing that we're most profoundly passionate about.
Yeah, that is incredible. And I think I recently went to Japan and became very inspired. I went to a robot cafe, and in this robot cafe, the servers weren't at the cafe. They were at home piloting the robots. And they hired people with disabilities. They hired people with different levels of skills, couldn't leave the house, all sorts of different things. But what an incredible way to include people. And our pilot was on our table and our little robot blinked and waved and spoke to us. And then there was a robot that came round and delivered the drinks piloted by someone else. And it was fascinating to see. So I think I'm really curious to see how this changes and develops.
I think that's such a great example. And I'd like to think that the people who listen to this podcast are the sort of people who have the kind of mindset and entrepreneurial spirit and tenacity to be the people who think of stuff like that, having listened to this conversation, because there's so much opportunity out there for the right type of people. But it's this type of person, it's the listener to this podcast, who's the one who's going to implement something meaningful to the way they work or to the businesses they run. That will be the people that drive change into the future and over the longer term. So I would say to anyone who's listening, the one thing I would say to them is, it's on you and us, because we are the people who are independent entrepreneurial spirits who bring about change. And it's only when people like us get together behind an idea that change happens. But it does happen. You know, big change events do happen when people get behind an idea and when the right people show that it can work. So that would be my parting thought.
I love it. My cheesiest expression I repeat to myself, if it's to be, it's up to me. And that motivates me to make it happen. It's so cheesy. I almost apologize.
Absolutely love it.
And on that note, if it's to be, it's up to you. If you're listening to this, check out workstylerevolution.com. Have a look at the book, Workstyle. There's some incredible ideas for you. Please do that. And remember, if it's to be, it's up to you. So go make it happen. Stop listening to us. Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Lizzie. Have a wonderful day, everyone. Go get them.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Alan.